welcome to the Culture of Comics. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Heiner, joined by Jason Frazier, and we are glad to be back. Jason, it's been 2 weeks, but it feels like it's been 2 months.
It feels like a lot has happened in this time. It has been a while. It's good to be back.
Definitely good to be back. I guess we should probably dive right into our topics today, but before we do that, just a quick station identification. This is the Culture of Comics. We are on the AMDG Radio Network, which you can find at blogtalkradio.com/AMDG. We've also recently been syndicated on Stitcher and TuneIn, so if you use those programs to get your podcast, add that with me. I've got iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn as ways for you to get our show. Our show continues to grow, and that's a positive, and we thank you for that. If you'd like to follow what we're doing on Twitter or Facebook, you can go to twitter.com/AMDG Radio or facebook.com/AMDG Radio. And we've gone through a lot of Marvel books. I don't even know if we're halfway through the catalog, but today we've got a pretty ambitious schedule, and I thought we'd just dive right into it. And we'll start with Thor, God of Thunder. And I think I want to intro this, Jason, by asking you how you felt about the last run of Thor prior to this book. How the Marvel Now Thor God of Thunder, written by Jason Aaron, how were you prepared for that, or not prepared for it, by the last run of Thor before Marvel Now started?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. I mean, when you look at Marvel Now, the point was to bring on new readers, and so bring in kind of new situations without all the hang-ups you might have before, without having to jump in at issue 50 or something like that. The last Thor series, though, started off pretty amazing because, Stephen, you may remember that Thor was essentially gone from the Marvel Universe for several years. He's kicked off, he missed the Civil War, he missed all kinds of storylines, and they brought him back, I think, was it J. Michael Straczynski him back? That I loved that run. It had some very weird, different stuff, but it had a very Thor feel to it. Now, with that being said, this new stuff, written by Jason Aaron, who I know you like quite a bit, I wouldn't say one of your favorites, maybe, but one you like a lot, a very good writer, bringing us in with a unique situation, right? Because this is we're seeing this storyline in the current Thor run with from the viewpoint of three different Thors. I should say three different timelines of Thors. We're seeing young Thor, the Thor of Marvel Now, and then old King Thor. It feels like, you know what it feels like? It feels like a Conan kind of book, a little medieval almost to me. Mm-hmm. The artwork and the way the story is going, the storyline, of course, is the God Killer and the God Bomb. I feel like this is interesting. We're still about, 8 or 9 issues into the current run, maybe even more at this point. And it feels like we're still on the same story. So usually you don't see that much anymore. Usually you get a 2 or 3 issue storyline and then you kick off and go on to the next one. So this is a pretty big and ambitious story he's telling. We've talked before about Jason Aaron and how he can be, he has some pretty big ideas and some very unique ideas. If you look at his Wolverine and the X-Men book, you would agree with that all the way. And I think I like this book. I like the art. I am a huge fan of that art. Esad Ribic, is that right? Is that how you would say that?
Esad Ribic, yeah.
There you go. Even better. I love that art. I mean, that's like a painting. That's like reading a painting, if you could do such a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's great, though. It's very good. I like it quite a bit.
I have to say I was really energized by it's not a reboot. Don't call it a reboot. It's the refresh of the Thor title. And I think it was because I was so disappointed with the last Thor run that I stopped. I didn't even finish the end. They wrapped up Ed Brubaker's Captain America, Invincible Iron Man, and Thor. They wrapped up all those titles around the same time, and I had the full run of Invincible. I had the full run of Brubaker's Captain America, but I didn't even care, even though I'm a full run guy, I didn't even bother to get the last like 4 or 5 issues of Thor because I thought, where were we? It was off. Completely somewhere I wasn't interested in following. And
oh,
so
yeah.
And it was tough for me because I love medieval things. You know, one of my favorite museums in America is the Cloisters, which has the largest collection of medieval art in North America. And so Thor is not a, I would say, medieval character, but he has a lot of a relation. There's a lot of relations back to that sort of time period and courtliness. And there's a thing I appreciate about it. So to have my love for Thor sort of killed off by the last run of Thor, I very cautiously picked up Thor, God of Thunder. And to say that I was blown away by issue number one, which I'm proudly holding in my hand, signed by Jason Aaron at Kansas City Comic Con.
Bragger.
What can I say? I feel pretty cool. But, but yeah, I very cautiously picked it up. And, you know, for those of, you know, some of our listeners, I would say a lot of our listeners don't live in Kansas City where Jason and I live. And Jason Aaron lives here in Kansas City, likes Oklahoma Joe's. He's a big barbecue person. So it's just neat to have someone like him, you know, nearby here, sort of a local artist. And he does appearances around here pretty often. But again, going back to the book, I love the three storyline comic. I don't think it's done that often because it's hard to do well. You don't have a lot of space within a standard comic book, 30 to 40 pages, to try to do that storyline. And yet, I think Jason Aaron's done it really well. And I think Esad Rabik's art, I mean, part of me says you can do this book without Jason Aaron's story because the art's so good. Part of me says you can do the story without Esad Rabik's art because the story is so interesting. You could just have, you know, a bunch of text, like, you know, Watchmen style. But because they're together, it's one of my favorite books.
I'm very glad to hear that. You know, what I thought was interesting, I agree with you, because I think the last run of Thor, towards the end, it lost the focus on Thor. It was really kind of all over the place. And I think the Asgardian realm, the Asgardian side of things in the Marvel Universe is fascinating. And I'll tell you over and over again, one of my favorite characters, if not my favorite Marvel character, is Loki. And I think he overshadowed Thor with his run. Of course, a different writer altogether in before Marvel now. So I would.
You want to give Loki his own book?
He had his own book for a while, that Journey into Mystery series. It was fantastic, written by Kieron Gillen. Oh, it was a great book. Oh, if you have not read it, you got to read it. It's one of the best. He's currently starring in Young Avengers. I know we're not talking about that today, so I won't get too much into it. But Loki is the man for me, and I think he overtook Thor towards the end of that last run of Thor. He was really more interesting as a character and better written. I am glad to see Thor back in the spotlight again because he deserves to be. And you're right. You know what? I think why this story works so well and why you say this three-timeline story works is because Aaron gives us just enough information to make us want more. Like, I want to know what the heck happened with the King Thor. I'm dying to know why Asgard's empty, what happened to his arm, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff.
What happened to his eye? Same thing.
Yeah, what happened? What happened to him? And so it gives us just enough to keep us hooked and want to keep, well, you know, I only got two pages of that, but doggone, I want to know what happened, you know, whatever it is. And I think that's what's making it work for me, is I'm just dying to know a lot. I love the Young Thor stuff. Cocky and arrogant. He didn't even have his hammer then. It's a cool book. You get a bang for your buck with this book, I think. And
let's talk about our villain a little bit, because there's a trend here with this villain that I'm watching in Thanos Rising, which is another Jason Aaron book, which we're not going to talk about today because we're only in issue 3 of Thanos Rising. I think last time we talked about Thanos Rising, I think we were either just at issue 1 or issue 1 and issue 2. So there hasn't been enough happening in Thanos Rising for us to cover that book today. But I do see Jason Aaron working in two different books on villains that I don't think he's trying to make them sympathetic. I think just because you show that a villain had a childhood, I mean, like, there are no villains that didn't have childhoods. I mean, they all have childhoods. And, you know, when we look at children villains, you know, we're still horrified by them, but somewhat, I think, children always mitigate things. And so looking back at young Thanos, or looking back at the young Gore, who was our new mega villain in the Thor universe here, I think you understand his point of view, but you're not am I wrong to say you're not at all sympathetic? I'm not at all sympathetic to Thanos. I'm not at all sympathetic to Gore. I can see that they definitely had a hard time of things, but nothing to make you go the way that they did. What's your take on Gore?
Well, I think first of all that his title is intimidating enough. He's not. We didn't know him as Gore when he first started. He was just called the God Killer, and his whole modus operandi was to essentially travel throughout the various realms, space, and just kill off various pantheons of God. That's all he does. And he's been very successful so far as we can tell. So, but you're right. I think he's probably more sympathetic than Thanos. Thanos is just a monster, if we're reading that book currently. There's nothing redeemable about him. Gore, I don't think he's redeemable either, with that being said. I understand where he's coming from a little bit, why he wants to do this, but he's taken a little bit of a revenge fantasy and taken it overboard. His revenge is not against his gods anymore. It's against all gods. And so taking away a lot of, you get to touchy stuff when you talk about gods, and that's, when you talk about gods in the Marvel Universe, I think one of the interesting things about Marvel is that they say, essentially from a religious standpoint, they say, everybody's right. So essentially, whatever God you believe in, he or she or it exists in the Marvel Universe. There's no wrong religion. I think we all know religion is something that gives us hope, and I think Gore's taking away hope from a lot of people. He's killing gods that essentially do exist, and not very nicely either. And he's working towards a big plan that we've just begun to really kind of get a grasp of in the current run, which is, I think, to end everything. I mean, realistically, I don't know where else that plan would go. But I don't know that Aaron was going for sympathy so much as he was going for understanding. We see what, and I think that was your point, Steve. I think you're saying we don't feel sorry for him, but now we know why he's doing it. And that makes for a better story any day of the week. I don't care who you are. That's good writing. But but it's Gore is not sympathetic to me, not in the least. I think he's exactly what he says he is. He's the butcher of gods, and that's something they get behind. That's something very hard to get behind. He's a monster just as much as Thanos is, but I think what Thanos has shown to be doing is a little darker, even. But Gore's—he's essentially trying to get revenge for the feelings that that gods killed his family, killed his people. Right. And so far, like I said, been very, very successful. But it's interesting. You're right. There is a theme between that with Jason Aaron going throughout. So, but I find it very hard to quote unquote like Gore. I like him as a villain, but I don't sympathize with him in the least.
No, and I mean I think the whole conceit of Gore ties to, and again, we've got a lot of books to cover today, so probably can't go too deep into this. But I think you were saying, when people talk about gods, it gets into a sort of touchy issue. But I think, again, what's the response? The response is, what is God supposed to do? God is supposed to take care of me, when I'm suffering,
mm-hmm.
Make sure mm-hmm. that you fix that. And I thought, I suppose in particular, this was July 4th weekend, and I spent most of it with 7 kids under the age of 8. And I watch how my sisters and my brother-in-law parent. And sometimes you kind of have to let your children, at least their children, my nieces and nephews, do something wrong so that they figure out, how not to do it again. And I think that that's sort mm-hmm. of Gore's issue here. It's a very sort of puerile, infantile notion of God, that God is just here to take care of everything you need, and that, if you're suffering or if you're going to die or if someone close to you is going to die, that the only reason that God, isn't taking care of it for you is because he doesn't care or he's got better things to do. And there's no step back to say, well, maybe that there was a purpose to it. And of course, I think Gore would respond cynically and say, well, of course, that's part of the PR spin that the gods would want you to believe. And we could probably get into a deeper conversation with the entire Wonder Woman storyline right now. But
I agree that's
part of a core issue here, apart from the fascination with the art, which we're really into, the three Thors, the God Bomb, meeting the different gods, looking at the new Thor universe, which is simply the old Thor universe, but better drawn. I think that that issue of, what are the role of gods, small g, and you can use that to be an analog to what's the role of God, big G. And I think it's a good question. I think that's one that will always continue to be asked by humans. I think it's a worthwhile question. I just think if we look at Gore's response, like, it's very much what a child would do. I didn't get what I want, so now I'm going to, you know, destroy everything and break everything up because, you know, that will fix things, which, of course, you know.
Well, yeah, that's a very good take on it. I would agree with that. I mean, it's a very, very good take because, again, we can't just say fix everything in our lives, right, obviously. And that's what he wanted, and things didn't go his way. So very, very good take on that, Stephen. Very good.
Well, we've got to move on. We've got a lot to cover today. Our very next book, you referenced Kieran Gillen with Journey into Mystery, and he is the writer of Iron Man, which I, with Thor, am just loving right now. Issue comes out. I'm reading it that day. Tell us, again, let's go back to the pre-Marvel Now Invincible Iron Man, talk about that storyline and relate it to how you feel about this current storyline, and I suppose you're probably going to have to tie in the connection to Guardians, but I'll let you
a little bit
run with it.
Well, the last run of Invincible Iron Man was written by Matt Fraction, right? I believe so, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Very, it was a good run. It was a nice long run. First of all, it starts off dealing with very beginning, we dealt with a little bit, this was not Matt Fraction, we dealt with Extremis, which is a part of the new movie that everybody's probably seen by now, and if you haven't, shame on you. Extremis, the whole run for me was dealing with changes for Iron Man. It was constantly being changed. He was losing, he lost his business again, he developed a million different armors, he was the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., lost that. We had to go on a run against what I would call a corrupt government organization run by Norman Osborn. And eventually kidnapped by the Mandarin and forced to try to build his ultimate giant octopus weapons. Titanomex, that's what they were called. But I think what was interesting about that is that he at one point, for the first time in God knows how many years, legitimately gave in to his alcoholism in that last run. And that was during the Fear Itself storyline. He had to sacrifice something to Thor's father, ironically enough, Odin, to find out how to beat this big, giant god of fear, and he sacrifices his sobriety. And I think that challenged him. As we went in for the rest of the series, I think there was probably another 10 issues after that, he was dealing with that, and he was dealing with trying, who am I, what am I really doing for the world? He's almost reactionary. He reacts to things as opposed to trying to make things better. And at the end of his run, before we go into Marvel Now, he decides to, he's going to change that. He's going to stop being reactionary. He's going to be proactive and get ahead of things and be the person he can be, which is someone who can really do a lot of good for the world. Now, he then takes off into space to go see what's out there because he's thinking too small and joins the Guardians of the Galaxy. But I think this new run with Kieran Gillen and Greg Land's doing some of that art, and I forget who's doing it now. Oh, Dale Eaglesham. Both of them are great artists, by the way. I know people hate Greg Land, but I'm kind of a fan. I like the really nice drawings. I like good pictures, Stephen. So, but
I don't know why people wouldn't like it. I think the armors he's drawing some great armors.
He's great at armor. I think he's found his book. But this new series, you know, we started off with him kind of dealing with the Extremis overrun, so to speak. The leftover Extremis, and he's gone back to some of his older. He's gone away from his color scheme, interestingly enough. He's now wearing black and gold armor, which I think is kind of cool looking. But he's now dealing with that, and then he deals with killing the Phoenix in the big giant Avengers versus X-Men storyline, repercussions from that. And goodness, now we're in the middle of what I think is going to be a very, I would say, controversial story for a lot of fans, right? And that's the
right.
Secret origin of Tony Stark. I think that's going to have some controversy. I like the story so far, but people don't like when they go back and mess around with old stuff, you know? They don't like it too much, but I think sometimes it's necessary.
Would you say it's messing around with old stuff or it's talking about stuff we've never talked about?
I would say it's messing with an established origin, but when you think about it, it's really not, because what you're getting at there is that we haven't really ever seen anything about Tony Stark's parents. We don't know what they were doing before. We know that they were there, but we don't know much about them, and now we're talking about how there might be a little more to Iron Man than initially thought. He's not quite he wasn't just rich and smart and all that. That's just too lucky. There was somebody behind all that. So, but I mean, it's I think the last issues of Iron Man from the previous run were about hope and trying to figure out and figuring out who you are and what you can do for the world. And I think this new run is kind of dropped off from that specific message a little bit, but I still really, really like the book. I think it's better. It's some of the best Iron Man that's been out in recent time, I think. I would say within the last 3 years, it's probably some of the best Iron Man. Good old-fashioned good stuff. He's back to his womanizing ways. He's rich again, of course. Got some very cool modular armor and some very cool space armor. He's got some good stuff going on. So I like the book probably just as much as you do, Stephen. If not a little more. I'm going to challenge you on that. So.
Well, no, I like Iron Man more.
No, he's fine. But it's great. I mean, what do you think about those first two arcs with the Extremis and the God Killer arc? Did you like those?
I liked it a lot. I liked Tony in trying to seduce the green alien woman, and the one thing that shuts him down is his beard. That's probably one of the first times that Tony's ever been shut down over a beard. But yeah, I thought unlike the Thor storyline where I was very unhappy with how Thor went, and like I said, I even stopped. I was in for the full run of the last volume of Iron Man, and was disappointed to see it finish. But I thought it was exactly where it needed to finish. You had him heading off into space, realizing that there are bigger and better things for him to do, and I think it was a great setup for us. I love the new armor. I love the tie-in with Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's necessary to give the Guardians of the Galaxy a big name because Iron Man's one of the hottest Marvel properties right now. Guardians is coming out next year. If Iron Man's part of the Guardians, which I wonder if that's going to happen in the movie, you know, that's sort of a question mark right now. I don't know that Robert Downey Jr. signed up to be part of the Guardians movie or whether he's just going to be sort of off-screen in the Guardians, the upcoming Guardians movie. But I really enjoyed the arcs. I really love his space armor. I would argue that the space armor for Tony Stark's my favorite Iron Man armor. I just really enjoy the look and feel of it, and the, you know, the idea of what you do in space. And the secret origin, I think part of why Tony's so despondent is, you know, one of those things that we're all humans, we have egos, and you know, we'd like to take credit for our achievements. We like to say, well, it's all about us, and you know, oftentimes we forget, very rarely is it all about us. You know, we stand on the shoulders of, you know, what our parents did for us, what our grandparents did for our parents, you know, good teachers that were in our way, opportunities. I mean, surely, yes, we, you know, I believe that when what people call luck is often opportunity meeting preparation. And I think that Tony's looking at sort of the success of his life and wondering, well, maybe this wasn't really my achievement. And I'm drawn back to that line from Gattaca, where he says, he'll still be your son, he'll just be the best of you. He'll still be you, it'll just be the best of you. And I think that Tony has to look at that and say, well, I'm still my parents' child, I'm just the best possible version of that child. And people have to live with that. You know, sometimes you're born into greatness, and sometimes you have to earn your way to greatness. And I think Tony's done a little bit of both. He was born into greatness, but it by no means guaranteed his success. You know, one of the interesting parts of issue 12, where you see how his, or maybe it was issue 11, but how you see how his genetic breakdown happened, it said, you know, addictive personalities, he has a proneness to addiction, which will drive his success. Now, he could have gone the other way, and he could have let his addiction completely own him, and he could have, you know, not had any successes. But I think that he did both. He was born into greatness, and he also achieved greatness on his own. And I think hopefully in the next couple of issues, Tony will just come to grips with that and realize that, you know, he has a role to play. And this villain here, it's hard to hate a villain who's all about Tony.
Yeah, and he's kind of always right. He, so far, he doesn't seem too evil yet. So I agree. I think Tony's probably not quite the self-made man he thought he was, and that's probably upsetting to him a little bit. You know, a lot of the stuff that he thinks he's earned and worked towards, he's kind of been given. And I mean, we knew money-wise and business-wise he had that, but he always had his smarts, his drive, and his ingenuity. And that stuff is now implied to have been given to him by somebody else. on purpose, not randomly genetic. It's been developed into his very DNA. So I think it's interesting. I have been kind of keeping up on other people's reactions. Some of them are kind of upset about it. I think, again, in this case, you just got to let it go. It's not that big of a deal. It actually adds to the character a little bit. But I still think the black and gold armor, that new stuff he had in the first five issues, that was really, really cool. Space armor is cool to me. It's just more of the same, I think, for me. But who knows? He's got 100 armors, so who knows? Everybody's going to have a favorite.
Well, yeah, and, DC did with Superman launching a bunch of books, when the Iron Man movie came out, there was a bunch of 258.1, 258.2, 258.3, and 258.4, Bob Layton, and some of the people who had written Armor Wars came back and did a sequel of an older age Iron Man before it was known that Iron Man was Tony Stark. It was during the Marvel Universe time when everyone thought that Iron Man was Tony Stark's bodyguard. And it was just interesting to see the evolution of the character. These were available for $3.99 for about four issues, and I think there was a one-shot called The Rise of the Melter or something like that. But it was just interesting, as you were saying, the evolution of the armor, as we're looking at space armor and the new black and gold armor. In this Iron Man, we see War Machine happen for the first time, but we also see two or three other armors that Tony created, one for deep space that has sort of a diver bubble on it, one that's a space mm-hmm. armor. And it was just fun to see that. So I liked the timing. I liked that we got to see sort of vintage Iron Man side by side with new Iron Man at the same time as we're seeing Iron Man appear in Guardians of the Galaxy. So it was definitely a fun little extra series.
Yeah, I enjoyed those. I enjoyed those quite a bit. Now, I think the whole premise that anybody would actually buy that Tony Stark wasn't Iron Man, I think that's the whole of the conversation. It seems a little hard to believe, but it actually was legitimate. People back in the day, nobody knew. If you just live off the movies, you think everybody always knew he was Iron Man. No, not necessarily.
Right. Anything else that you'd like to say about this Iron Man, about this character, before we move on to our next book?
No, I think that people by now, because of the movies, know who Iron Man is. They do a very good job. I don't want to say that they do a good job echoing the movies of Tony Stark. The movies did a great job of echoing who Tony Stark is in the comic books. And I think that if you enjoy those movies at all, you're going to enjoy the character. He's just exactly what you expect in the comic books, only you get a bigger budget, so it's more exciting than the movies in a lot of cases. So I think if you're not buying the book yet, you're interested in Iron Man, you should jump on it, because it's I'm interested to see where we go next. We've gone into space, we've gone into all kinds of different armors already, and just in this 12 issue series, he's already been in several different types of armor. So it's an exciting book, and again, by one of my favorite writers. I think probably my favorite Marvel writer right now. Kieran Gillen, just amazing. So jump on it. That's all I got to say about it. Just jump on it.
All right. So moving on in the sort of top shelf Avengers, people who make up the Avengers. It's still going to be a couple shows till we get to that. As you know, Marvel has a large number of Avengers titles and a large number of X-Men titles. So it's going to be a while before we get to all those, but we got to lay the groundwork and get through these books. We're going to talk about Captain America, and similarly to Thor, God of Thunder, we have an incredibly long arc that is still running through issue number 8, which is the most recent Captain America that's available in Marvel now. And again, I'm going to attack this the same way that we looked at our last few books, which is, can you talk about the Ed Brubaker run on Captain America and tie it into this? Because I know you'd mentioned on another show that you're not a big fan of this art. So you could probably segue into talking about this new book, how you feel about the art, and then how you feel about the storyline.
Well, I think if you look at these two runs, the initial Captain America run from pre-Marvel now, and this run, they're two entirely separate things. It's hard to compare these because the writers are going in such different directions. Ed Brubaker he wrote probably, I would say, the seminal Captain America. Even going back to 60s, 70s stuff, this Ed Brubaker stuff was the best Captain America written. And it was very spy thriller, international thriller kind of flavor to it, right? It felt like a Jason Bourne movie sometimes, something like that. And of course, Ed Brubaker's run included so many things that we never thought we'd ever see, including the return of Bucky, his partner who died in World War II. You know, there used to be a saying that everybody stays dead except for Bucky and Uncle Ben, and that used to be true. Now Uncle Ben's the only one who hasn't come back yet, though. Bucky is now back under a different guise, brainwashed by the Russians as an assassin called the Winter Soldier, which we'll be talking about later in the show, so stick around for that. But bringing him back and then tying that into the Civil War and actually killing off Steve Rogers, Captain America, and then having a new Captain America take over, there are three things right there in the first 30 issues you never thought you'd see. Things that no one's ever really tried, at least that successfully before. He went, goodness, how many issues was it? It was probably close to 80 issues, right? Something along those lines, with the multiple series that came out. It was amazing. I think that series probably trumps out the new series, and I'm saying that as a person who likes the new series. The Ed Brubaker stuff, if you can get to a trade paperback for that, I know they have some omnibuses out for that as well. You can get the whole run in one big book. You should definitely take a look at that, because that is a fantastic run across the board. Just well-written, amazing art, just a fantastic run overall. It's hard to have anything negative to say about that one. Now, we come into the new Marvel now, and we have writer Rick Remender and artist John, now I don't know if I'm saying it right, John Romita, Romita Jr.
John Romita.
I never know how to say names.
John
Romita
Jr. Romita.
I always think I'm going to say it. I never say them out loud, so I'm always worried that I mispronounce them. So John Romita. I'll tell you this. I said in the previous show I'm not a fan of his work typically. I would say he's probably not one of my favorite artists. I know people say that they love his work, but it's so simple, and everybody kind of looks the same, and it's hard to tell what's going on sometimes with some of his work. But I think something has changed with this new Captain America run for him. Because I don't know if it's the color, the person doing the coloring, or what, but something about it makes the drawing seem richer for me, so I'm enjoying this book quite a bit now. But this book is much weirder, much more sci-fi than the previous run. The Captain America was always, I know it sounds ridiculous, in the previous run it was rooted in a quote-unquote reality. It wasn't a lot of superpower stuff getting thrown around. But this run is, it is weird. What are they calling it? Zola World, or I don't know what I don't think that's what I'm calling it. But
Dimension Z.
Dimension Z, that's it. Yes. And I think I'll let you take away Dimension Z and explain that one away, Stephen, because that's it's interesting.
Yeah. We get whisked right into Dimension Z right away, and I think that was probably something Rick Remender had to do simply because of everything Jason said, which I agree with, about Ed Brubaker's run. Ed Brubaker, in a way, is Captain America in the writing. I think if you look at the look and feel, the storyline of Ed Brubaker Captain America books, it's hard to say that there is such a thing outside of that. You can say that is the genuine article. That is what a Captain America book looks like. And I think Rick Remender knew this, probably because he was reading Brubaker's work and thought, well, anything I do that looks like this or even tries to do this is going to be terrible, or it's going to just be seen as an imitation. So I've got to go way off the map. And I think that he did a very good job, because I think many of us, after the Ed Brubaker run, were kind of wondering, well, who's going to take over from Ed Brubaker? I mean,
right.
who's going to write Captain America? And I think he did a great job of pivoting. So, you know, we get a tease that, oh, maybe it's going to be business as usual, but then it pivots right away, and we're off in a weird dimension, Dimension Z, run by Arnim Zola, who was, you know, part of Hydra back in the day, and he has transferred his consciousness into a machine, and he has two little children, and he's trying to take the super soldier's blood and put it into one of these children. And in the very first episode, we sort of see Steve escapes, takes, we don't realize, we think the baby's maybe killed, but turns out Steve Rogers takes this boy and raises him as his son for 10 years.
Can you believe that?
We're in Dimension Z with Cap for 10 years, and so I think Rick Remender also wanted to say that he'd been writing Captain America for roughly 10 years. So he would be able to say that to whoever he was dating. I think that'd be pretty cool. But but I think that he manages. I think Rick Remender did a very good job of saying, "Look, I'm going to give you old Captain America, but I'm going to beat him down every way possible. I'm going to try to take from him whenever you can." And seeing Cap isolated in another dimension with a bunch of aliens, I think, was a really refreshing change of pace, a really interesting point of view. And I guess I don't mind the art. I actually like it. I like the different look. I didn't want it to be like the Ed Brubaker run. So I'm happy with this look of Cap. You just sort of wonder, those are some durable clothes to last 10 years. I think that's probably that's a big takeaway from that. He's wearing like Superman's cape, as part of his part of what he's doing there. But yeah, that's Dimension Z. And what do you think of the conceit? Do you think that it was a good move? Do you like it? Are you ready for it to be over?
I'm kind of on both sides of that fence. I like it quite a bit, but I don't know about you, but I'm excited to see what he wants to do next. Now he started off with some of the strangest and polarizing decisions for this character. I think, where's he gonna go when this ends? What's he gonna do? What's Captain America gonna do with this writer when he gets back into this home dimension? I am incredibly curious about that, but I do like the story here. I think it was brave to even say he's been there 10 years. He's a character. Your Captain America is not on Earth for 10 years. I mean, what? I'm beginning to wonder, because if you have to wonder how that would fit into the continuity of the rest of the Marvel Universe.
I think he's only been gone 10 years in Dimension Z. I think in the Marvel Universe, as usual, it's probably been 4 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, you were gone 2 seconds, bro. I think it's so brave. It's so different from what we've seen from Captain America for probably 10 years. I mean, arguably 10 years, ironically enough. Because I believe Ed Brubaker started about 2004 or so. So it's been about 10 years now, and we've seen a certain type of Captain America and a certain type of story, and it hasn't had this weird aspect to it, because Captain America inherently, as a guy who's just a super soldier, and I say that in a way that people are, don't get mad at me, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. He's not an X-Man, he's not a space Iron Man, nothing like that, he's just a dude. So he typically fights fairly street-level villains or fascist villains, and see him throw off into this weird, just bizarre alien dimension, leading an uprising, raising his son, losing everything that's made him, but still keeping onto his ideals, I think, in a lot of ways. It's a very, very good story. What I also like about it is that we also get to see a little bit of Steve when he was a little kid, before he went and tried to join the Army. We're getting some of that very old history on Captain America now, that his dad
Secret
was kind
origin
of a prick.
Of Steve Rogers.
Yeah, his dad's kind of a prick, and his mom, a hard-working woman who probably died in the coal mine. I don't know, but she's I like that part too. I think it's good to see, because what we're seeing is we're seeing this child of Zola's childhood, and then we're seeing Captain America's childhood, and it probably sounds, if you're hearing this, you're probably thinking that sounds awful, but it really meshes together really well. And it's such a very different Captain America book than what we've seen before, so I have a hard time hating it. I think the art has – I don't know what it is. I think the coloring has improved or something. It just feels better and looks cleaner than it usually does. So I don't have – again, in this case – and I told you in the very first episode of our show, you're going to have a hard time getting me to say anything bad about Marvel. I'm not going to start today. Nothing we're going to talk about today is going to be bad in my opinion. So I love Captain America. I love these three books. Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor are some of you. They are getting the attention and the quality they deserve. And so I'm behind all of them. I think that's just fantastic. I am so excited to see what they do next, though. I just can't wait to see where he goes after Dimension Z.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Pick up the new Captain America. It's not your Ed Brubaker's Captain America, but it's still very much worth your time. So that knocks out three of our, well, I guess you could say our core line adventures. The ones that everyone thinks of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That gets us to the Jolly Green Giant, also known as Indestructible Hulk, shall we say?
That's correct.
I did not read the title prior. The pre-Marvel Now Hulk, I did not read. And I have to confess that I am not a traditional Hulk fan. I think I've been unfair. And I think part of it maybe is I'm more interested in the duality Bruce Banner /
Mm-hmm.
Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for
long
time, maybe the focus has been on Hulk. And what I think grabs me right away from the beginning with this book was the conceit of having Bruce Banner. So enlighten me a bit. You know, what did you think of the pre-Marvel Now Hulk? I didn't read that book at all. And how do you feel about Indestructible Hulk?
Well, I am a fairly recent Hulk fan, and I say that within, I've been reading it for probably 6 or 7 years now. And I really joined in. I missed the Planet Hulk storyline, which everybody raves about quite a bit. I did not get to read any of that. I jumped in at about the time of the storyline. You may remember this one, World War Hulk, which is when he came back and took revenge on some heroes who had shot him into space. And at that point, I was not a fan of the character. I think he's, well, I'll say it again, I think he's kind of a prick. He's like Captain America's dad today. You know, in those storylines, he was being written as just an anger. Again, we talk about, in this case, revenge with, like, Gore. Some of Hulk's revenge was, he's like, you guys shot me into space because I destroyed Las Vegas. That's what the problem was. He said he's causing too much damage. He's hurting people. He can't control himself. Let's shoot him into space onto we found a planet that's going to be peaceful for him. Didn't turn out that way, but the people who did this, Iron Man, Mr. Fantastic, people who shot him into space, couldn't have known that. It was a complete error, just a complete weird series of events that led him into this warlike planet where he suffered and then eventually took over the planet and got a queen and got her pregnant, and then everybody dies in a nuclear blast. So Hulk's pissed off. He's just mad. And he comes back and he says, well, you guys tried to, you know, make the world better here, so I come back and I'm going to get revenge. I'm going to destroy New York. And I'm thinking, God, this guy's a dick. What is his problem? That's hardly a good revenge scheme, because nobody, you know, the Joe Schmo paying for an apartment on Fifth Avenue there. Well, Fifth Avenue is probably rich anyway, but paying for an apartment there, you destroy it because that's something somebody else did. I can't get behind that. But then the stories that came after that is really what began to hook me back into Hulk, because they brought a lot of the Banner aspect back. So, Stephen, when you were talking about that Banner duality, I was right on your wavelength, buddy, all the way. That's what hooks me in with the Hulk. I like the character, but I like the new direction, because prior to the new pre-Marvel Now, the book was getting very, very odd. We have now 4 or 5 different Hulks. We have, of course, Bruce Banner, the Green Hulk. General Thunderbolt Ross, his archenemy, is now the Red Hulk. Banner's wife or ex-wife or whatever she is now is the Red She-Hulk. Banner's cousin is the Green She-Hulk. You've got all these Hulks, and eventually they just, I mean, it just began to get very lost in itself, I think. And then, pardon me, after they ended that run, Jason Aaron wrote a 12 or 15 issue run of Hulk, which I think was some of the weirdest stuff I've ever read, and stuff that while I kind of liked it, I kind of hated it at the same time. I don't know. it was very weird. So I was looking, this new book, Indestructible Hulk, written by Mark Waid, was what I was looking for in a Hulk book. This is great, because we have Bruce Banner now saying, I don't want to be known as this guy who smashes things. I'm one of the smartest men on the planet. And everybody forgets that. So he goes and he essentially, I'm going to use my quotations again, quote unquote, he applies for S.H.I.E.L.D. He says, I will work for you. You will give me unlimited resources and I'll develop some things to make the world better. That's what you'll give me. What I'll give you is a cannon. You can use the Hulk as a cannon. Point him where you want him and let him tear stuff up all the way. And I think that's such a unique take on the Hulk, and something that I've been waiting for years, is for Hulk and Banner to work together a bit and be used in a way that's going to better the world overall. Because as a character before this, you're just thinking, this guy, he just gets mad and destroys stuff. and that's what he does. You know, that's it. It's hard to get behind a character like that. So this is now, I love, love, love this new direction. Can't even express it enough. This is what Hulk needed to be years ago. But I digress. I can go on and on about that. Let me ask you what your thoughts are about the new version, since you weren't reading the old one. This is probably something you were waiting for as well. So what do you think?
Yeah, I have no basis. So it's interesting to hear you talk about sort of the collection of Hulks. You know, I'm obviously for the hot red She-Hulk, but everyone else can go take a hike. But I think that having not had any background and being reluctant, and this is something we've expressed on previous shows, I'm reluctant to pick up a Marvel Now title because I'm afraid I'll like it. It'll get added to an ever-growing pull list. I'm just trying to keep up with what
thing.
I have, people. So I'm very hesitant to read a Marvel Now title. I'm not saying that. All joking aside, I really don't want to like a book and have to start subscribing. But I wanted to get through all the number ones. And just because I read a number one, it hasn't meant that I've continued with it. I love Matt Fraction, and I thought, okay, I'm not a traditional Fantastic Four fan. I'll pick up the first four Fantastic Fours, give it a shot. Wasn't interested. I get the storyline. It's not for me. Same thing. Picked up Deadpool number one. But right away from the beginning of this story, the idea of questioning between Banner, Hank Pym, and Tony Stark about who's smarter, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a clear answer to that. And I think that they're all great in their own ways. I don't know that we could say one intelligence is greater than the other, although I suppose with the end of the Age of Ultron, we could make an argument for at least one person. But I think that that's what grabbed me about the storyline is I'm just not interested in watching Hulk smash for 27 pages. I've just got other places to spend my money. I get that there's a certain demographic of the population for whom that is their night and their day. And if any of our readers, any of our listeners are those readers, I'm not, God bless you. That's great. That's just not me. And I needed a bit more of a cerebral book. And that's what's been great about this. One of my favorite moments in Marvel Comics this year was in Incredible Hulk, I think number 5, in which it appears as though Hulk can lift Mjolnir. And the last panel on the book is Hulk worthy. And it's just, if I can, the next time I'm at a Comic-Con, I'm going to get that framed. I loved that panel, just fantastic art. And then if you look at the Marvel AR, there was a whole discussion about molecules within Mjolnir, you know, what type of particles would allow something like that. It's the end of number 5. Now, maybe it's 5 or 6 where Hulk lifts the hammer.
It's 6.
Okay, so 6. And I just really, really am enjoying everything about it. And what's interesting, and we also get to see a sort of alternate timeline Thor. So for those of us who like Thor, we get to see some classic Thor here. But unlike the Captain America and Thor storylines, which have just been an ongoing arc from the beginning of Marvel Now, we're already, I don't know, I guess on our third arc. I feel that the Incredible Hulk, Indestructible Hulk is the name of the new Marvel Now title. I feel that this is a vehicle for lots of little shorter arcs. I mean, maybe they'll introduce a much longer arc, but I've been enjoying the little runs. And I suppose part of that is it's hard to engage on multiple long arcs at the same time. I think that's hard as a comic book. That's very challenging, especially if you have multiple books that you pull to do that. And I think probably Marvel knows that and probably has some restriction on, well, we can't have this many multiple arcs going on at the same time. Say.
Well, you know, I think
it's
also
really,
indicative.
Really enjoying it.
I think it's indicative of the writer. I mean, this writer is one who's giving you one of your favorite books right now, also, right? And that's Daredevil. If you look at Daredevil, there was a big overarching storyline, and it still is, as a matter of fact. I think it just finally wrapped up, kind of one of its initial. But we had 2 or 3 issue takes, little stories here and there, adding up to that. And I think Mark Waid's very good at that. And I think that's probably what you're getting a lot of the flavor of what you like, Stephen, is Mark Waid knows how to speak to you, so to speak. I think the first three, four, five issues are fantastic. The Asgard one almost lost me a little bit. I wasn't going to drop the book, but again, I am very picky about my art sometimes, and the art is doing that again. Not my favorite. So that began to lose me a little bit. But I think I love the idea of Banner being the main star of this book, and you're going to see a lot of Hulk, guys. Don't let me scare you away from that. It's not all Banner and two pages of Hulk, but I just love the conceit of this book that Banner is finally trying to be somebody, and it's about damn time, if we're being honest. So I think this book is another one that I think, much like Daredevil, one you can probably want to keep an eye on. I think this one, he might have a bigger arc planned ahead, especially with his think tank. I think there's some stuff going on with them we don't know about yet. So I am pretty excited to see where this one goes as well. This one's a little bit easier to, as you said, it's not one that I have to read right away when I pick it up. I know I'm going to like it, but because it's not a continuing story over and over again, I don't have to jog. Okay, where did I leave off? You know, what happened last issue? It's kind of one you can pick up and one or two issues at a time and get a full story out of it, and that's pretty fantastic, pretty indestructible.
So we've got four great core line sort of main Avengers figures, and we consider those main, and we consider, let's say, Clint Barton and Natasha Romanoff as sort of minor Avengers. Although, you know, I think Hawkeye's gaining a lot of prominence with the new book, but I still think in the Marvel Universe he's considered a minor Avenger. So our big four, with the Hulk in parentheses as part of that four, so you've got Thor, Iron Man, Captain America plus Hulk, and those books are the ones we've been discussing. For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to The Culture of Comics on the AMDG Radio Network. I'm Stephen Heiner, along with Jason Frazier, and we've covered those four books, and we're gonna move forward. And our next book, he's not an Avenger at all. And also someone I'm going to lean a little bit on Jason for. My experience with Gambit was in the 90s with Marvel. He had his own book, and I think I bought Gambit number one and really enjoyed that. And I didn't, in fear, and so this is what I did on Winter Soldier and Gambit. Out of sheer fear of liking a line and having to buy more, I bought the trade paperback. And I thought, all right, well, you know, if I like it, I'll keep going. That's what I did with Hawkeye, actually, originally. So I bought the trade paperback of Gambit, and I have to say I enjoyed the storyline, but I have no reference for what the Gambit run was prior to Marvel Now. So as I've been doing for the whole show today, yeah, Jason, I defer back to you and ask, what did Gambit look like before Marvel Now, and what do you think of the current Marvel Now run?
Well, I think this is a completely different book than what you would have expected. When I picked up Gambit number one, I've got the entire run, issue to issue. Wasn't quite what I expected, and not in a bad way. I expected Gambit, for those who don't know, is, you probably watched him on a cartoon in the 90s, really came into a prominence with the X-Men number one by Jim Lee back in 91, and then in the cartoon became kind of a unique character. He's a Cajun, a thief, it can charge kinetic energy into inanimate objects, but I think he can do everything now, and blow it up. That's his, he can blow stuff up. That's his primary power. He can do some other little interesting things with it, but one of the only characters I know who can, for some reason, pull off a hot pink spandex jumpsuit. I'm not really sure what that was about, but that's an interesting decision. But this book is so different because, essentially, before Marvel Now, before this new series, Stephen, Gambit, in my opinion, was beginning to kind of fade away. We got into this big, the X-Men were in a very different direction than they are now. They were all united, and they were all in San Francisco on an island. Wasn't a lot of mutants left back then, but you had enough people to cover that Gambit kind of fell to the wayside. He wasn't the focus. As a matter of fact, he didn't even have his own book prior to Marvel Now for several years. He's had a few middle miniseries here and there. Rogue had her own doggone book, but Gambit didn't. So We didn't really know where Gambit was at coming into this new book. He had finally transitioned over to Wolverine school as a teacher. I don't know what he's teaching. I mean, it must be like card tricks and thieving, maybe picking up ladies, because this dude gets a lot of play. I don't know. He gets a lot of play.
Yes, he definitely, so, definitely teach a couple of, to teach some graduate level classes on that, I think, definitely.
Yeah. So, but this book kind of drops all of that, all of those conceits to the side and says, who is the character again? You know, what's, who is Gambit? And it comes down to him being kind of, he's not really a team player. He gets with the teams, he works with them, but this book is who Gambit is, or who I always envisioned him to be. He's a thief. He's a solid a lone wolf. He wants to do his own stuff. And this book, he really, we get rid of the old costume. We get rid of the teams. He doesn't. It's Gambit on his own doing his thing, and that's stealing stuff for the most part. Getting into wild, international Indiana Jones-esque adventures. Really, that's what it comes down to me. He's kind of like Indiana Jones with mutant powers. That's what I mean. I think that for me is how I would sum this book up. It's Indiana Jones with mutant powers. How about that? But it's interesting. Very interesting. He kind of gets himself into trouble quite a bit and gets his way out of it. He's the con man. He's the consummate con man. But to answer the question, he wasn't doing much before Marvel Now. He really wasn't. He was in the X-Men, but he wasn't very prevalent. He was certainly one of the least, I don't want to say least known. Everybody knows who Gambit is. But he was not getting much feature time. He was kind of in the background. You see him in a few panels here and there. He might have a line, but he didn't have the prominence that his own book affords him, and didn't really have any interesting stories for several years. As a result, he really was kind of, I want to say, kind of boring before this book. He didn't have a lot going on. So I think you didn't miss much, Stephen. I'll tell you that. I know you don't read a lot of X-Men, but that's where you would have seen him, and that's really the only place you would have seen him. And even then, you'd be lucky to see him once every couple of issues in the background somewhere. So,
okay.
I think he probably needed this book because we need a book of Gambit because, like I said, there's no Indiana Jones anymore. We can all say that. That's the last movie, pretty much a dead character. So
I think there's another one coming out. I think there's another one coming out, unfortunately. But
no.
I mean, they're rebooting the Terminator franchise. They figure. Everybody's rebooting. Everybody's getting new trilogies. I mean, they might just reboot Indiana Jones, which would just kill it for me.
Well, this book, you know, the only way they can make Gambit any more, I got to use my trademark phrase once every show, but at least once every show, any way they can make the book any more fun is by taking it off of, putting it into the Max series, kind of the mature series, and getting some hardcore language and stuff, because otherwise, you know, outside of that, Gambit's kind of, he's a scoundrel, and he works through the underside of everything, so he may have fit better into kind of a more mature series even, but this series itself is pretty good. I like it. What are your thoughts? You just started reading it. You were kind of hesitant. What do you think about it?
Well, I simply read the trade paperback, and that was it. For me, it was a good storyline. I liked seeing the character that I loved from the 90s again. But I wasn't compelled enough to add it to my pull list. And I think I've set a really high bar. I think that, Jason, you're more patient and you're more loyal than I am in terms of your books. I've heard you say before, you know, I'm doing it out of loyalty, or I'm keeping up with the book because, I feel like I have to. And I'm torn sometimes, and that's probably a meta conversation for another time. But I think I just have the bar set. I mean, the books that we just talked about, Hulk, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, I can't wait to get those books. And when I do, they're read. And with Gambit, I think it was like a backstory. It's sort of an Easter egg. Okay, I want to know a little bit more about Gambit. Great. That's a great storyline. Appreciate that. Or do you want to keep reading Gambit every month? I don't know. And so for me, I think those first five issues of the Marvel Now Gambit, which I read in the trade paperback, I definitely enjoyed. Definitely had a good time reading them. Don't regret it. But it wasn't at a high enough level from all the other Marvel Nows that I've sort of set a new bar at to add it to my pull list. So I would agree with that. That's where I'm at with that.
Yeah. I can completely agree. I can understand that completely. I mean, it isn't a book that is historically as exciting as those other four we talked about. Those as you said, pretty much month to month. And even I would say this I put this on the level for me, the same level as like as Daredevil and Hawkeye. It's a single for me. A lot of times, single character books that aren't some of the big Avengers characters, they don't quite get as much attention. And I feel like, again, I've talked about this before. Sometimes if the character isn't getting enough attention, they don't get the quality that you feel like they could deserve sometimes. And it's not to say that this book of this series is bad. We're up to issue 14 now. It's very interesting. He's got this is another book that has roughly, you know, maybe a 5-issue story arc, and usually they're a little less than that. So it's but it's, again, I'm going to say it again, it's fun. Woo! He gets into some trouble. He goes all over the place. He travels all over the place. He goes to alternate dimension at one point. He goes into the realm of magic in Great Britain in the latest issue and gets lucky with some fairies. literal fairies. along the way, there's some good character beats, so to speak, there. He is developing as a character. It's good to see Gambit on his own because, again, if you like Gambit, and a lot of people probably do, you haven't got a lot of love for the character lately. Even when he was in Wolverine and the X-Men as a teacher, you didn't see him. He didn't have much lines. In AVX, all these big Avengers books, he wasn't a huge portion of those. So this is one more for people who are maybe already familiar with Gambit a little bit about what he was and want to know more about the character. I think that's a fair assessment of the book. It's a good one, but it's not one I can understand you saying it wouldn't be. I don't have to go buy it every month. I don't have to see it. I don't have to. It doesn't affect the rest of my stories, so I don't have to read any of those. And that's true. It's kind of it's kind of a guilty pleasure. I think probably I like Gambit. I like the stuff he gets into, the James Bond, Indiana Jones-esque kind of lifestyle he lives there with all that stuff. So. It's interesting, but I can agree that I would agree with you wholeheartedly. It's not as exciting as those other four, not in the least.
Yeah, it's sort of a supplemental book, and I suppose we'll use that to get going into our next book, which is Winter Soldier, another book that I did not get the... It didn't start, for those who didn't know, Winter Soldier didn't start with Marvel Now number one. So a lot of the books we've been talking about today, Hulk, Thor, they were a number one Marvel Now. Whereas Winter Soldier didn't interrupt its run. It was already going, and then it just became a Marvel Now title, and they continued their numbering. So Winter Soldier, one of the few books, like Journey into Mystery, that has just continued on with its current numbering, and I wonder how Marvel is going to deal with that. But just like with Gambit, I didn't have enough history. Well, I would say I actually had more history with Gambit. I liked Gambit as a teenager and bought that, like I said, that original Gambit number one from Marvel back in the 90s. But I didn't really know too much about Winter Soldier. Obviously, part of it is I know what the next Captain America movie is going to be about, that there's an interest there. But I heard it really being talked up on a Marvel podcast. I don't think done by Marvel, but by people who read Marvel books. And someone just couldn't stop going on about Winter Soldier. And I thought, well, this is sort of the talk that I heard about Hawkeye. Hawkeye is probably one of my top three favorite Marvel books. Just loved the most recent issue of Hawkeye that came out. I'll have to wait probably another 6 months to talk about it. But the same way I discovered Hawkeye, I thought, well, maybe I'll discover Winter Soldier. And like with Gambit, I got the trade paperback that had the first 5 issues of this new run. And I enjoyed it. It was good. I didn't realize there was so much his backstory with Black Widow. That's really fascinating. It's interesting to be back in the Cold War in a way, or at least going back to the landmines left by the Cold War in the present day, the sort of secret version of Captain America running around. There's a lot of really interesting tropes. Again, I found it to be part of a backfill of my Marvel Universe. Like, wow, okay, I get that a little bit better now. I'm really glad I read that trade paperback, but not compelling enough for me to add it to my monthly pull list. Happy to be told that I'm a crazy loon, Jason. Tell us your thoughts on Winter Soldier.
But Winter Soldier obviously feeds out of the amazing Brubaker run we got, as we discussed a little earlier. It was a very hard-to-miss, just amazing run, and of course, a big cornerstone of what made that so cool is what Brubaker did with the Winter Soldier in that time. And Brubaker actually was writing, as you said, it started before Marvel Now, before Brubaker left Captain America, he was actually writing the first several issues of Winter Soldier. And with that being said, I think he wrote up to issue 15, 14, something like that. And I'll tell you this, Stephen, those first 14 issues were probably where the hype came from. That was a good story. I think as we got towards the end of that series, the last, I think it just ended. I don't know if you knew that. It just actually ended with issue 19, I think, something like that. So we only got, the new writer only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, like 6, 5 issues of the series before it ended. And that story, that last story, was very bizarre. So I don't think you're missing much if you leave that story to rot in the sun, so to speak. And not that it was bad, it just wasn't compelling to me. And very, I feel like I'm able to get a good grasp on things pretty quickly, but I just had no idea what was going on with the story. I'm like, what is happening? I don't understand what's going on here. So the first 14 issues are great. They're pure Brubaker across the board. We get some good storyline with Black Widow, and of course some big changes with the Winter Soldier, who was dating the Black Widow, and we get a big change with their relationship and some interesting developments and some memory wipes and all kinds of interesting things like that. That was good espionage. That was, again, and that's where this book comes into play. It's an espionage book. It wasn't really a superhero book, kind of a spy book. But those, yeah, the first 14, great. I think I would recommend people read that if they like Hawkeye, because it's got a very, I would say, a similar voice, probably, but not quite the same. I think what sells Hawkeye for you and a lot of people is the way that story is presented. I think that's what we're, and I think this could have been, if this had had a unique approach, it probably could have been as good as Hawkeye in terms of numbers and people raving about it. But it was, when it was being, again, those first 14 were very well written, very interesting. I liked the character quite a bit. But after that, that 15 through 19, I forget who took over. I want to say it was Jason Latour or something like that. I haven't read a lot of his stuff anyway. So I was kind of, I hung on to that one because I knew it was going to be ending and I wanted to see where it went. Otherwise, I probably could have let that one go pretty quick. If it was still going now, I might have let it go by now, just because it's not quite the same. It lost some of its touch. Sometimes you find writers who know characters so well, who adapt to them and write them so well, it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't feel right when someone else is writing them. And I think that would have been the case with this one. That book, it completely changed its, I don't want to say tone, but the voice completely changed after the 15 through 19. Those were kind of, those lost me. But before that, again, I think at least the first 5, 6, maybe even the first 12 to 14 are in trade paperback now, and they're worth a look. They are more Brubaker stuff, more good action, more good spy stuff. But again, not one that I would say. I guess you can't jump on it now because it's ended. It ended last week or 2 weeks ago, something like that. Maybe 3 weeks ago. It's been recently over. So it's not one that I would say you have to jump on, but it is an interesting take on the Winter Soldier. And if you want to get some insight into where the Winter Soldier, who it is, what's going on, you got to read that Brubaker Captain America run and maybe read the first 14 issues of this in trade or however you want to get that, because that's going to give you some good insight into the character. I think they're going a similar direction with the next movie. But after that, you can probably let it go. I hate to say it, but you can probably let it go. The last arc did not hook me and did not make me want to stick around very long.
I liked what I think I liked from the trade paperback was the art. It was very noirish. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of some mm-hmm. of the things that Sean Phillips was doing over at Fatal. Mm-hmm. I liked that sort of gritty feel. Like I felt like I was, you know, reading a secret agent book. Things were in the shadows. Things weren't entirely clear. I got where they were going with that. But yeah, disappointing to see that they didn't do something with that. Perhaps we'll see a relaunched Winter Soldier when the movie comes out. I think Marvel might take advantage of that.
I think they will. I think there's been some hints. I kind of follow comics throughout. Right? There's been some hints that this wasn't the last we've seen of him. And I would be very, I think it'd be very, very goofy to bring him back after 40 years of comic book history, if not more, and then do nothing with him. So I think he'll be back, and I think he'll probably get the attention he deserves eventually. I honestly feel like those last five issues were just kind of treading water till because they knew they were going to end it. It was kind of like a fill-in story almost, and not because it was bad, it just wasn't to the caliber that it was before. But I agree, the art was fantastic after that. I mean, I think even the art changed after that, Stephen. Even the art changed a little bit, and again, nothing really hooked me after that. I know it tried, but I wasn't really buying into it. So it's one that the first 14 are great. After that, you could probably drop it.
All right. Well, let's pivot from there to a series that I picked up, again, through doing some exploration. I got the Mark Millar trade paperback of The Ultimates. And I have to say I was hooked. It might be part of the reason that I like Injustice in the DC universe. I love exploring alternate universes. I really like the way Age of Ultron came together in the current Marvel universe, or shall I say the new Marvel multiverse, I guess. We'll have to see where that goes. Mm. But I really like The Ultimates. Why don't you, Jason, feel like setting that up for us? I mean, who are the Ultimates? What is that? How did it come about? You know, why did Marvel even feel the need to do it?
That's a very, very good question, and there's a very good explanation for it, I swear. The Ultimate Comics Ultimate is an alternate take on, an alternate dimension take on the Avengers. And the reason that we have an alternate take on the Avengers, and not only that, I should tell you, for those who don't know, Ultimate Comics also... It has the Ultimates, which are the Avengers. It has the X-Men, which we all know who they are. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, which is also a very, very good book. I can't wait to talk about that one as well. And of course, a few miniseries here and there. Ultimate Comics Wolverine just ended. It's basically the Ultimate Comics dimension. It's an alternate take on Marvel Comics that we know and love. But they started this in the early, I think 2001, 2000, they started the Ultimate line because they wanted to bring in more people, and they didn't want people to have to worry about the continuity. They didn't want people to worry about 500 issues of Spider-Man or 600 issues of the Avengers. They want people to feel like they jumped into something that was fresh and new and brought in some interesting. I mean, Mark Millar, he's a brutal writer. If you read any of his stuff, he wrote, for those who don't know, he also wrote Wanted. He wrote, Kick-Ass, all kinds of good stuff. Yeah. So he's
Secret Service, which is being made into a movie by the same guy who did X-Men First Class.
Uh-huh. You know, Mark Millar also had a very good run on Fantastic Four, and I thought that was very unique because you're thinking Mark Millar wouldn't really be the kind of person you would think would write Fantastic Four.
Exactly the family guy.
Right, exactly. And some of the stuff he's written, the Ultimate Comics, what's interesting about the Ultimate Universe, that's what they call it, so that's how I refer to it from here on out. The Ultimate Universe is different from Marvel in that, first of all, it's very high stakes. I know that sounds crazy in the comic book world. What's more high stakes? When people die in the Ultimate Universe, they die. They don't come back. And so, and that's a very anti-comic book trope, at least currently. And the storylines, at least in the Ultimates version, the one that you read, Stephen, initially to start with this, to do the back research, it was kind of a real-world scenario. It was kind of they were using these Ultimates to get in the middle of world incidents, international incidents, things like that. But all the characters are so different. And I shouldn't say different. They all have different takes on them. Captain America is much more of a hard-ass than he was in the current universe. In the Ultimate Universe, not only does he kill, but he is wicked, wicked strong. He beats the piss out of people. I don't know how to say he's a brutal man. The Hulk is a 2,000 pound cannibal, something like that. He goes crazy. He tears stuff apart and eats people, and he's not a good guy. Hank Pym is This is a tough thing for me to admit because I hate this. I hated the storyline and it really in a brief. Hank Pym is a wife beater or a spousal abuser, not to a pretty brutal degree in the Ultimate Universe. The Wasp is a mutant. Iron Man's Iron Man. He's still kind of the same. He's still an alcoholic millionaire, but at least in the Ultimate Universe, he's still an alcoholic. He enjoys it. He doesn't necessarily want to get away from that yet. But the Ultimates, They went through a big storyline change a couple of years ago called Ultimatum. And I don't know if you got a chance to read this one yet, Stephen, but it totally changed up the way the Ultimates worked. It ended the Ultimate Fantastic Four, which I love. That's another one that Mark Millar wrote on too. Was Ultimate Fantastic Four? It was great, Stephen. If you don't like Fantastic Four, I think you really like the Ultimate Fantastic Four because it's such a different take and it's very, very interesting. But he wrote that as well. And this storyline, Ultimatum, wiped out the Fantastic Four, turned Reed Richards of this universe into the bad guy, killed most of the X-Men. It killed Wolverine and Cyclops and all the major characters, Charles Xavier, Magneto. It killed the Wasp. They killed off a lot of characters and set the stage for kind of a reboot of the Ultimate Universe almost. Again, a reboot without a reboot. Everything still happened, but it's a fresh start. And the Ultimate Comics line came out of that. And so it's now in a different place, but we still have our same characters. At this point, several things have happened in the Ultimate Universe to make it very different and unique from ours. First of all, first and foremost, which I'm sure you're familiar with if you've read the Ultimate, Stephen, the most recent Ultimates anyway, is that Captain America was elected president of the United States. Mm-hmm. He's a big man now, or he was. He was at least a big man, but he also... President America. Well, how would you deal with something like that if you went to the UN? It's President America! You know, I don't know. But, and not only that, Reed Richards, who we know, at least in our current beloved 616 standard Marvel Universe, is, he wouldn't harm a fly half the time. He's very, very... Almost, I don't want to say nonviolent because he does do fighting, but he's not quite as brutal. And oftentimes, when you talk about earlier about the smartest people in the Marvel Universe, Reed Richards is at the top of that list. That's not even, you don't even question that. But in this universe, some things have happened. He's now the bad guy. He destroys most of Europe and part of America. He destroys it. So the Ultimate line is dealing with a lot of repercussions of things that the real Marvel Universe just couldn't do. They can't do that. And that's what I like about the Ultimate line is that it has the freedom to really be just over the top and drastic. You know, it is intense. We've gone through several, we're actually going through a storyline now called Disassembled, which I think, Stephen, is going to tie into the end of the Age of Ultron. We saw some tie in with the Ultimate Universe in the end of that series as well. I think a lot of that's going to come into play very soon. But long story short, pardon me, Ultimates is a little bit more real world take on superhero. A lot of science, not so much magic. A lot of drastic things to keep the stories very, very intense and interesting. When did you jump into the Ultimates? Was it with what issue would you say was the last one you read, Stephen, or the first one you read? Excuse me.
The first one I read was 18.1. That led me to go back and get the original Mark Millar trade of Ultimates 1 through 6. So I just ordered, I was hoping it would get here before the show, but they haven't gotten here, but Ultimates Volume 2 and Ultimates Volume 3. So I'm reading the current run with a bit of gap in my knowledge, but it hasn't been hindering my enjoyment too much. I suppose I'm going to ask, you know, the question, Ultimate Universe or Marvel Universe? I mean, which do you prefer?
I prefer the real. Ultimate, for me, again, is just an interesting side story. It's for many people, it's all they read, and I can appreciate that. I mean, sometimes what we deal with in the real Marvel Universe is just too much story, too much continuity behind it. So for me, Ultimates is always going to be second place, but it's still a very good second place, and I make a point to always read it and keep up with it. And nothing wrong with it. I won't say there's no particular reason. It's just that these are the characters, different takes on characters that I already know and love. So I enjoy reading those different takes, but I will always be more in tune with the main Marvel Universe. At least so far, unless I do something crazy different.
Yeah, and I like the miniseries too. There was a really great 4-issue Iron Man Ultimates universe, and I really enjoyed that. And as you say, it's a extra fun yeah. Extra stuff.
So the current run, though, I mean, what they got going, I don't know. Have you read the latest issue of Ultimate Comics Ultimates yet?
I have.
What a weird...
The,
what a,
Yeah, well, everyone's a bad guy, I guess.
Everybody who we the Hulk is now a bad guy. Reed Richards is a bad guy. They both have Infinity Gauntlets. Stuff's about to get real. You know, Infinity Gauntlets, and at least for those who don't know, are essentially our God buttons. You do whatever you want with those things. You can alter reality, change time. So now that there are two in play, and on people who originally we thought of as heroes, who now they say they're trying to save the world, but they're taking some pretty drastic measures to make that happen. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I think the disassembled tagline on it interests me because I wonder if they're thinking about ending it or rebooting it. And there's also been talk, like at least from some of the articles that I've read or some speculation that they're talking about merging the universes, which I don't know about. But they're doing something. Something's coming down the pipeline for this.
We'll find out soon, I'm sure. I feel like Marvel's got so many things up in the air right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, let me just say this, if we're ending this conversation, let me put it this way. If you're going to read Ultimate Comics, we'll start off with the ones that Steven is talking about, the Mark Millar run. That really kicks it off. That's an amazingly well-written, well-drawn book. Brian Hitch does the art there as well. Both the first two, Steven, are great. Ultimate Comics 3, you're probably not going to like as much. Jeff Loeb wrote those, and they're a little rough. I'll put it that way. They're a little rough. But those first two are amazing.
Do I need to read it to understand the current storyline, or can I skip it?
You could probably skip it. I mean, there's going to be all it does is essentially lead into that ultimatum storyline that I was talking about. That's where it mainly leads into the ultimatum storyline. You can really, if you'd like to, I think you could skip it and wouldn't miss a thing.
Okay.
It was, I think those Mark Millar ones are the best. You have to read the second one, though, because it gets even crazier than the first. You're going to love it.
Okay. Okay. Well, this wasn't a planned part of our show, but I feel like it's a natural fit here. We'll wrap up our talk on alternate universes by finishing up Age of Ultron. Number 10 and Number 10 AI have come out since our last Marvel show. And post-game, what did you think? Recap for our listeners what you were thinking about the Age of Ultron. Did that change, or was it the same as it ended? Did you think it was a successful event for Marvel? And then I'll kind of take off from what you think.
Right on. Well, I'll tell you what. For those who listened to the show before, you probably already know, but my take on Age of Ultron was that I didn't think it really had a place in what was happening with Marvel currently. The story felt out of place. I didn't feel like it was going anywhere. We never really even saw Ultron, the main Ultron villain. I don't think we even saw him until issue 10, the last issue. So I was reading this because I knew it was going to have big repercussions. And I, of course, Brian Michael Bendis did some great Avengers, at least in my opinion. And this was essentially his ending of his Avengers. So I wanted to see how he wanted to end it. But issue 10 changed everything for me. Issue 10, after I got finished, I was like, now I get it. Now I know what they were trying to do. And the goal that they were trying to get to actually makes the rest of the story more interesting to me. I can appreciate the whole story more because now I know how it ends. And I'm thinking, well, now I get it. Now I'm excited to see what happens next. And I'll let you spoil it if we're going to spoil it, Steven. But for me, the last issue brought everything together in a way that I did not think was going to happen. I was thinking this is not going to be I was more excited for next month for the Infinity crossover or event, and that's going to be – I still think it's going to be very cool, but I am so happy with the way they tied up Age of Ultron. Again, it makes the whole series worth it to me. I'm glad I read them all. I'll probably read them again. I've got them. I'll go back through and read them all at once instead of month to month and kind of get a bigger picture, but I just love the ending. I love the new direction potentially we're looking at, which is – as you alluded to, potentially a multiverse kind of situation and emerging. And I think we're going to see a lot of that happening now. I think we might see something happen with the Ultimates. I think we're going to see Spider-Man 2099 appear in Superior Spider-Man in a couple of months, as a matter of fact. So it's going to begin making waves in the Marvel Universe bit by bit. We talked about the character Angela, who was traditionally an Image character who originated in the Spawn comic book, jumping ship and joining the Marvel Universe at the end of Age of Ultron. And she's going to be joining Guardians of the Galaxy next month. So interesting. Very, very interesting. Totally worth it for me. The whole series is worth it to me now. Before, I was kind of iffy. But now that last issue pulled it all together in a way that I was not prepared for.
I think I tend to agree with you. I was waiting. I felt like issue one or book one, they were calling it book one, book two, book three, book four. The shipping dates for them were sort of part of building the momentum. I was like, oh, wow, this is great. I can't wait for next week. There's going to be another book. And then it sort of lost, I don't want to say lost its way, but we got into the slow part of the Age of Ultron from books 5 through 7. And you really didn't see things start to move and really enjoyed it. I think if we could create a rules for a crossover, I think we could probably come up with those rules right now. I think the first rule is major change happens. It isn't a tease. Right? So they don't say, you know, Marvel Universe, we change forever, and then it doesn't, right? So, yes, major change happens, plus more implications to come down the road, you know, as yet unknown. You know, we even get a new book out of it. So major change happens. Change is implied that is not yet realized that we'll have to unpack later. We get a new book, Avengers AI, which we can't talk about today. We'll have to talk about when we get to the Avengers show. And further development of characters and character relationships we hadn't seen before. I mean, Wolverine and Sue Storm. I mean, are you kidding me? Hank Pym, a deeper side of Hank Pym. I think part of that's Marvel's long-range strategy. How do we get Ant-Man ready for movie theaters? We're really going to have to build up the profile now. So a lot of smart strategic thinking here. But, yeah, rules of a crossover, I think Age of Ultron probably nailed it. Great storyline, great art, involvement of a lot of the Marvel Universe, so you don't feel like there's any part of the Marvel Universe that isn't touched. I think Jason would probably say, correct me if I'm wrong here, maybe a weak point would be not as many tie-ins as you would like.
No, I like tie-ins, but I my rule to add to your rule would be keeping it as self-contained as Age of Ultron was. You could read that storyline, and it did not impact your other books. And I think that sometimes if you're a fan of Marvel Comics or any comic that does an event, sometimes you get sucked into it because you're reading this book monthly, and now you're reading it. Now you have a crossover of an event you're not even reading. I think they did it just right here, but they left most of the tie-ins on the floor. They kind of said, no, we don't need all of that. We'll just put the ones we really need. And I know with the Infinity storyline that I've been kind of touting for a couple months now, it's going to have so many tie-ins. It's going to be another one of the Secret Invasion kind of things where there's going to be so many tie-ins of this book. We're already getting prelude tie-ins of this. So I think my major rule of the crossover, keep it as self-contained as you can so you don't interrupt those who don't want to be a part of it. I think as a comic book reader, you should be able to make the choice of if you want to read this or not. And sometimes you're not given that choice with many other crossovers. In this case, you were. And I think they did it. That was such a good decision.
Yeah, I was really pleased with it. I thought it wrapped up well. And thank you, Marvel, for a successful crossover event. We may now resume our regular book pulling activities. of course,
well,
just give us give us about a month break, and we're going to get into Infinity. So.
And then we have, like I said, I think I've already looked at the solicitations, and we have something like at least 5 Avengers tie-ins already. So it's going to take over a lot of our books for many months. So good thing we don't have a month-to-month discussion because it might get boring. Another Infinity conversation. You're great. So I think that's going to be a very good storyline. It's written by Jonathan Hickman. I think we're going to be looking forward to that. But I think that this was done very, very well. And like I said, if you weren't on board yet, if you haven't read the last issue, I hope that it had the same effect on you that it had on me. But now I get it. Now it's there, and it's a good story. Because I had thought that they had lost their vision before that. I was not understanding where they were going. I didn't get it. I wasn't really on board yet, but now I am, all the way.
For those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to The Culture of Comics on the AMDG Radio Network. I am Stephen Heiner, along with Jason Fraser. And we've been talking about a ton of Marvel work today. We started with Thor, God of Thunder. Then we went to Iron Man, Captain America, Indestructible Hulk. We talked about Gambit, Winter Soldier. And we just finished up a discussion of Ultimate Comics, The Ultimates, as well as the end of Age of Ultron. In Marvel, last thing I want to talk about today, Jason, And we actually made pretty good time. I was a little worried that we were going to have to get through all these books today, and we've actually done pretty well, economical use of our time. So gives us a little bit of time to talk about the upcoming Wolverine movie. So the next time we have our Marvel show, the Wolverine movie will have come out, which is called The Wolverine. Why do you think we keep seeing movies about this character, despite the fact that they don't have to necessarily do well at the box office? Is it the Resident Evil effect that, you know, as long as you make some money, that's good enough? Is it because Hugh Jackman is such a good Wolverine? Is it because movie studios can't stop making comic book movies right now? Why are we seeing another Wolverine movie when we haven't even seen one Wonder Woman movie yet?
Well, I think Wolverine, I think we talked a little bit about this, and there's probably a lot of discussion we can have about Wolverine at the end of the day, but I think a lot of the discussion is that the character itself resonates so well with a lot of us who grew up with the 90s cartoon, the big X-Men explosion of the 90s. He really took off then in a way that he hadn't quite taken off before, and people just like him. He's just a badass. You know, he's got claws and he heals. How cool is that? But I, as you know, am not the hugest fan of the character. I used to be, but I've kind of passed my love on to other characters. But I do like Wolverine a lot, and I'm happy to see them doing another movie. But I will say this, the last movie, god-awful, right? I mean, it was cool as a Wolverine movie, I suppose, but from a movie standpoint, it was just all over the place, and it messed with a lot of fans' perception of what some characters would be and just messed with a lot of stuff. I think the reason we keep seeing it is because fans want it. I mean, I think sometimes movie studios are nice. I don't think that's the sole reason we're seeing it. I think they think there's money to be had here. I think there's probably some issues with licensing where they want to have to keep making a certain amount of movies with the license within a certain amount of time, or else they lose that license. And with them coming out with that X-Men movie next year, I think they want to keep on to the Wolverine and the X-Men as long as they can at Fox Pictures. Otherwise, they're right to revert to Marvel, and God forbid Marvel make a movie about their own characters. That would be awful. But anyway, how awesome would it be to see a X-Men movie with the same caliber or same buildup as the Avengers had? I think that would be amazing. But again, I digress. I think it would be very cool. I think that Marvel Studios could tear that apart. But this new movie, what interests me about this is this one, they're taking this one a little more seriously. The last one, like I said, it was just all over the place, and it was kind of cheesy at certain points. This one takes Wolverine to some areas that I didn't think they were going to get into. I didn't think they were going to get into the Japanese stuff that Wolverine was involved in. So I'm interested, and that's some of the best stories of Wolverine in Japan. Some of that best stuff is when Wolverine was in Japan or the island nation of Madripoor, something like that. He's a samurai, and that's a big part of his character. That's why he's able to not be the animal that he's so scared of, is because of that training. And I think now we can just see a little bit. Now, I understand this movie is not actually going to be a prequel. It's going to take place after the X-Men movies and the previous Wolverine movie, obviously. So it's going to be kind of a sequel a little bit. But I'm happy to see where they're going with it. Taking it more seriously, it seems to be more of a kind of movie Wolverine as a character probably deserves. And so I'm pretty excited for it. I wasn't initially. I mean, it's something that I kind of had to grow into. But the more I saw the previous four, the more I read about it, I'm thinking, this is it. And this is what they need to do with the first Wolverine movie, quite honestly. So I think it's going to be pretty good. They got some very cool characters coming in. They got Madame Viper coming in, which is a very cool villain on the Hydra side. I'm interested. They probably won't have her be in Hydra since Marvel owns those rights, but she is the leader of Hydra, as I know her. And it's going to be, you know, what's interesting is that movie is actually tying into a little bit of the storyline that's happening in the Wolverine comic books right now that they're leading to. And that's a storyline coming up that's going to be called Killable. And so the movie is going to echo the comic books a little bit, and Wolverine's healing factor is going to be either taken away or lessened to a degree where he can be killed now. And that's a place that Wolverine hasn't been in, and in God knows how many years. So we get to see a little bit more, bring him back down to Earth a little bit. He can't be nuclear bombed and then grow back. You know, it's going to be a little bit more like, hey, I got a broken arm. It'll take me a week to heal instead of, you know, a month for like a person. So I'll be interested to see where it goes. I'm very excited for the movie, though. Are you going to go see that, or what are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I think my interest peaked even more when I saw Famke Janssen as Jean Grey in one of the trailers. and he has a nightmare about killing her again, and great to see her, reprise that role.
Always.
But I think going back to what we talked about at the very first, our very first book today, we talked about Thor, and this sort of idea of what are the gods supposed to be, and I would say the conceit of the Wolverine movie is, what is immortality supposed to be? Isn't it supposed to be awesome?
Mm-hmm.
And
you're right.
you can see the look on Logan's face, and I think this is a huge testament to Hugh Jackman and how well he plays the character. But when the man says, "I can free you from immortality," essentially, that I can help you find peace, I can help you die. And what does immortality
mm-hmm.
mean? And we've seen some of this also with the Josephine character in Fatale. Immortality
mm-hmm.
means you outlive everybody you ever cared for.
Yeah.
You live long enough to see everyone else die, or in the words of Harvey Dent, perhaps you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And I think Logan's lived so long and dealt with so much heartbreak. Is there room for a heart? Is there room for any person in there? Is he just a killing machine? There's a line from last season of Game of Thrones, season 2, in which the Hound is talking to Sansa Stark, and he says, "Your father was a killer, your brother's a killer, I'm a killer, the Lannisters are killers. When you have kids, they're going to be killers, so you better get used to looking at, killers." And one of the things we talked about in our last Marvel show in the Wolverine comic book right now is the soft side of Logan. He's got this, part for kids. He has a school for, wayward mutants. And how will we see this in the movie? How will we see this part of Logan, which, has had to take such a beating over years and years and years of being immortal? How will that play out in the movie? I think that's the compelling, that's the reason for me to watch is,
yeah.
I get all my fight scenes. I think I said this about the Man of Steel movie. I guess a part of why I wasn't that focused on the fight scenes in Man of Steel is because I feel like I get all of those in my comics. So when I come to a movie,
yeah.
I want to see the sort of compelling story. And so I get all the Wolverine fight scenes already. And heck, Wolverine just killed himself in Age of Ultron. So, how are you going to top that in a movie? So I'm focused on Logan's storyline. I'm focused on how he develops the character, and I can only hope and pray, dear God, that they don't ruin this movie. That it follows the current superhero trend, which is, it seems like you can't make a bad superhero movie right now. It just seems like all the studios are on fire.
I would agree. I think. I wish that tragedy wasn't so well written, because as a character, you feel bad for Wolverine. He's had good moments, but they're always taken from him. He is probably one of the ultimate tragic characters, probably more so than Batman, because he's lived longer than, as you said, he outlives everybody. He loses everything. It's either taken from him or he outlives him. And so it's going to be a good movie, I think. It looks good. I'm so far, if I giving it a pre-review, I say it's going to be at least 3 out of 5, right? But I'm hoping that it surpasses, like Man of Steel did for me. It surpassed my expectations. Well, this Wolverine movie looks better and better. I think they're going to do it just right. That's my deepest desire, is to really get the X-Men back off the ground, because after that third X-Men movie, Last Stand, as you remember, and the Wolverine movie, they need it. The X-Men First Class kind of helped bring them back a little bit. But let's keep that going. I don't want to stop.
I think those points are well taken, and I think it's a good place for us to end our show. And as we said throughout today's show and in other shows, we will be dividing Avengers and X-Men into two different shows. It's just too much to try to do all the Avengers books in a show and all the X-Men books in a show. So we're going to figure out the best way to deal with that moving forward, but expect to see that in our next Marvel show, which will be, as always, the first Sunday of the month. Thanks for those of you who, we don't have many live listeners. The vast majority, by like 100-to-1 ratio, download the show. So we don't have many live listeners. We have a lot of podcasts listeners, people like to download the show and listen to it on your own time. We appreciate that. You may not notice that we were taping the show at 6 p.m. Central Time today instead of noon. Just trying out a new time, see how that works for Jason and myself. But it won't affect most of you who maybe just know that our show will be available for you on Mondays for your listening pleasure. And we hope that we've been a productive 90 minutes for you, that you've enjoyed what we've talked about. As we said before, Culture of Comics is on the AMDG Radio Network, which is on blogtalkradio.com/AMDG. It's also syndicated via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And if you'd like to leave ratings for us at any of those apps, be very appreciated. Helps us get more visibility. More people listen to our show. More people listening to our show means more opportunities. More opportunities means more content for you comic junkies. Jason, any other thoughts before we close out today's show?
No, you know, I think I do appreciate the listeners very much. I think we have got something going on here. This is so far very good. But I do want to reiterate that you could help make it better. If you want to contribute to the show by sending us questions on Twitter, you can do that even a week before the show if you'd like, or whenever you'd like. Questions, comments, eventually we'll be able to make it so you guys will be able to call into the show. Feel free to become a part and have discussions with us. I think that'll help us grow even more, and I'd love to hear what some of you think, because I'm sure some of you probably disagree with Stephen and I in some areas, so I'd love to hear that.
Absolutely.
So thank you to everybody. This has been fantastic, and Stephen, thanks again for a wonderful show.
Thank you, and to Jason's point, if you'd like to write us, if you'd like to appear as a guest on the show, if you'd like to see a book that we haven't talked about that you're outraged hasn't made it onto our show yet, comments, questions, you can get us on Twitter. We're at AMDG Radio. You can find us on Facebook. We're at AMDG Radio. And you can email us, amdgradio@gmail.com. And we promise we'll get back to you in an expeditious manner. And looking forward to our next show next week. We'll be talking about Valiant, one of my favorite comic book companies, and all of their new titles. But until next time, we'll leave you.
Bye.
Bye.